Today's episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
If you're enjoying Unwell, you should also check out World Gone Wrong, the new show from the Unwell team. World Gone Wrong is a cozy chat show hosted by best friends Malik and Jamie, set in a wildly fictional world. Malik and Jamie were roommates when the world ended. Now, separated by half the country, literal acid rain, werewolves, aliens, and more, they start a chat podcast to stay in touch and work through the increasing uncertainty of their new apocalyptic reality. Each week, Jamie and Malik will tackle topics like, should I change my office hours to accommodate vampire students? What if the body snatcher that took over my ex is nice? When did the kudzu start humming like that? Malik and Jamie are here to help. World Gone Wrong stars Michael Turrentine, who plays Wes in Unwell, and Hillary Williams, who plays Joey. Learn more at audaciousmachinecreative.com and stay tuned for a trailer at the end of the episode. Listen to World Gone Wrong wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi. I'm Yusuf Dahl, and when I was 18, I was convicted of selling drugs. For the past 3 years, I've had difficulty finding housing because it is legal in the United States to discriminate against individuals that have a past drug distribution conviction on their record for life. It doesn't matter if it was a hard drug like heroin or a drug that's now legal or partially legal in many states across the country, like marijuana. The Thurman Amendment was introduced to the Fair Housing Act in 1988 by segregationist Strom Thurmond, and it's since been used to deny housing to all people. But because people of color are disproportionately jailed for drug charges, we are affected more. My goal is to overturn this amendment to start an end to housing discrimination that unfairly targets people of color. If you would like to join this movement, please visit ThurmanAmendment.org to learn more.
A message from the Fable and Folly Network.
Welcome to the Unwell Halloween Special. We are here in the living room again with Ellie, Eleanor, Josh, and Jeffrey to share some ghost stories from the Unwell cast and crew. I'm going to have each of our storytellers come and introduce themselves as they tell a story. Eleanor, should I tell a story first?
Tell a story.
Jeffrey, tell us a story.
Tell us a story.
Make it scary.
Not too scary.
So I think an important thing to know about this is that Mount Absalom is at least in part based on the town of Gambier, Ohio, and to some degree Mount Vernon, Ohio, both of which are in Knox County. Now, I lived there for two periods of my life, when I was a undergrad student at Kenyon College, and then later when I was teaching there. And what you should know about the Kenyon campus, which encompasses most of Gambier, is that it is one of the most absurdly haunted places. It's really wonderful in...
You like that it's the most haunted place?
Yes, of course. Cool. No, absolutely. There are these old buildings. We figured out recently that Gambier was founded about the same time Chicago was. But, you know, there have never been more than, you know, seven or eight people in the county, whereas Chicago obviously got huge.
Nine people.
9 people, at least. 9 people or more here in Cook County, Illinois. The thing about, I think, hauntings on campus is that they're really great places for ghost stories to develop, because you have a bunch of young people together in a really intense portion of their life, and the population turns over really quick. So you get to that, like, you can be a saint place where no one who is living in the place actually has met you, or the majority of the people who are living in the place have never met you, pretty fast. Like I was saying, Gambier is a very small town. The school's population is 1,500, and there are a few hundred other people living in the area. So very small. Okay. So the first story I want to tell is about the residence hall called Old Kenyon. Now, Old Kenyon is this beautiful, picturesque, but not picaresque, dorm. It's got these spires. It's on all of the logos on Kenyon's material. And it's one of the oldest buildings. And back before the school went co-ed, which was embarrassingly recently. Anyway, I think I purposefully haven't looked up any facts, because that's not what Ghost Story is about. But I think this was somewhere probably around the 30s or maybe a little after that. There was a dance at Kenyon. And so some young ladies from one of the local women's colleges came over, and they had a great time, and everyone's in their fancified dresses, and then they went back to continue the party in Old Kenyon, the dorm.
This is
the after party.
Scandalous.
And the dorm caught fire and burned to the ground.
Oh, no, that's cute.
Yeah, well, this is a ghost story.
I guess somebody kills. Has to die.
Yeah.
That fire committed a serious party foul.
So, a number of students very sadly lost their lives. But this was the iconic building for Kenyon. So, of course, they rebuilt it. They went, they dug out the plans, the architectural drawings, and they rebuilt it exactly as it had been.
Simon Says Old Kenyon.
Years pass, and students at Kenyon start to notice something. There are feet hanging from the second floor ceiling, walking up and down the halls, coming into the rooms at night.
What?
Just like ankles and feet, lower legs, wandering through the halls.
Visibly walking on the ceiling?
Not footsteps.
Not footsteps, but like...
This is not auditory, this is a visual.
Apparitions of feet coming, sinking down through the ceiling.
Oh.
That is very weird.
So, they go back. They look at the drawings. It had been misconstructed. And the ceiling had been raised a foot.
Oh, that is so weird.
That party did raise the roof.
Oh, no!
Wah, wah.
And so there were these spectral feet that were locked in the place where they were. Forever doomed to wander partway through a floor.
Whoa.
What?
Right?
Wow. That is...
Like...
Is the reconstruction still standing?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. It's still there.
I feel like it's gonna be bad enough to be a ghost, but to be a ghost who's in...
The wrong place.
Building, like,
oh, yeah.
Mismatched with the building.
That seems Splint. Super uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Constantly walking through wires and pipes.
Uh-huh. I really like what you said also about a college being such a natural breeding ground for that sort of urban legend quality of story. It's the ultimate location for my cousin's friend who mm-hmm. lives in Canada now. And yep. I can't ask easily. But totally swears this happened.
Also, thing about, you live in a dorm and, you hear one weird noise and you're like, that supports the story.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
Not to mention how many of these have also been debunked over time as being, weird, issues of physics with weird construction as well. And where better are you going to find that than...
Oh, those floating feet are just the water moving through the pipes.
My ghost story that I was going to tell also happened to me in college, is a college story, but it's one that happened to me. Partly a, when you work in the theater, weird things happen story. And also a, sometimes history is a little too present kind of story. So when I was in college, I took a junior year abroad. And I went and I lived in Cape Town, South Africa, cool. which was amazing. It was an incredible experience. And while I was there, I was studying in the theater department, among other things. And I was, because of the way that theater department is structured at the University of Cape Town, they don't have a lot of people who are interested in technical theater. And so I ended up stage managing a show because I was one of the few students who had ever done that before. And I ended up stage managing, and I think they were really excited to have me stage manage this show because I am an American, and it was an American play. And so they were like, this is great. We can all listen to her accent, and it'll be really helpful, which was kind of hilarious. But it was an American play about slavery, about interrogating and... I tried to look it up and I'm really sorry, you guys. I cannot for the life of me remember the name of this play and I feel bad about that.
The Music Man.
It was not The Music Man. But it was a play. It was a play about contemporary Black women confronting the legacy of stereotypes that come out of slavery narratives and how you handle those things. And so, first of all, I was the only American in the room for this play that was, all about, American racial history. Mm. And secondly, I was the only white person in the room. Mm. So, everyone else working on this show, the director, all of the actors, everyone else was Black South African, which was an incredible experience, to be frank. It was fascinating, and I learned a lot from it. Okay, so we're working on this play. It's really interesting. I really like this team. And we finally get to the part of the process where we move from the rehearsal room on one part of campus into the performance space on this other part of campus. And the theater department at the University of Cape Town is downtown. And it's in this beautiful colonial, and I mean that in all the senses,
yeah.
Colonial complex of buildings that were all built 150 years ago, and they're gorgeous. And so the theater that we're performing in is in this big hall that has been there for at least 150 years. And so we get in there, and as the stage manager, I get the keys and I get the tour of this is how the lighting instruments work and here's how you turn on the power and all those things. So we get into the performance space for the first time, and we are running the show from start to finish for the first time. And no tech, just like spacing in the performance space. And we get to the part of the play that's the emotional climax. And it's this really intense scene where there's a lot of heightened emotional stuff going on. Not even going to get into more than that. It's not important. And we get to that point and we sort of hit the point in the play where everything comes to a emotional, pitch point. And all the lights go out. Everything. Everything just snaps out. And the thing about a theater is that it's designed to not let any light in. Mm-hmm. So when all the lights go out, it is fucking pitch black. It is just dead to the world black. And this is before smartphones.
Mm.
So like nobody has a flat, like there's, yeah. So we all kind of like stumble to the door and we get outside and all of the lights in the entire like campus complex are out. And everyone on the team is really freaked out. We're all like, that was really intense. And feels like it was about us. That feels like it was about us. Anybody else? So we're all super freaked out. We kind of like chill outside and we like run lines for a little while. And after a while, somebody figures out that ostensibly this happened because a car ran into a like a power interchange thing on the sidewalk outside, and it had knocked out the lights for the whole block. Yeah, but we were all terrified. Okay, so that happens, and then maybe like a week later, I come into the theater, and as the stage manager, you know, you always show up before everybody else, and so I show up in the theater, and I'm kind of like getting everything set up. I come into the big empty space, which is like, I don't know, as a theater professional, I always found that standing in empty theaters is like a really really cool and intense feeling.
Yes.
It's like, this is a place with a lot of like power somehow, where like cool, like all this stuff happens, and when it's empty and it's just you, it's just, I don't know, there's a lot of,
it's like being in a sanctuary.
Yeah, there's like a, yes, it is. It's like being in a church all by yourself. Like,
yeah, there's also a way in which, I don't know, I have definitely sat in empty, especially empty theaters where there's nothing on the stage, and like you kind of can't help but imagine the like 10,000 things that have happened on the stage, especially a very old theater.
Yeah.
Like just how many different quote-unquote lives have been lived out on this stage in every infinite kind of permutation.
So I'm like having that experience.
Yeah.
And I go up to the booth and I go to like do my regular thing and like flip all the things on, and nothing will come on. Nothing. Like I go in the basement, I flip the like breakers on and off. I try literally everything I can think of. No, nothing. I cannot get a single light to come on in the entire space. All of the regular, like the ghost light and the like, which if you don't know, a ghost light is like the light you put on the stage when everything else is out so that people don't hurt themselves. And like the, you know, fluorescence worked fine, but like none of the theatrical lights would turn on. And I just was like, I started to feel like really spooked out by it. I was like, this feels like something is happening in this space that I don't understand. And so that happened twice. Like that happened, and I like had a whole conversation with the tech director for the department, and like he came and helped me like figure out what he thought had happened. And then I came back another couple days later, it happened again, and I was like, it's still not working. So I started to just like have this very deep feeling like something about this space was like, there was a lot more. So I started doing this thing. I don't know, you do stuff. Like, it felt right. But I started doing this thing where every time I would walk in the theater, I would go like, hello, I'm here. Hope you're having a good day. Like, I would just like talk to the room, and then I would do it again when I was leaving at the end of the night. I'd be like, hey, I'm gonna go now. Please don't break anything while I'm gone. Okay, bye. Like I just started having this conversation with the space. And okay, so then we get like a couple more days into tech. And the woman in the cast who was playing one of the lead roles, she and I ended up at the theater early one day together, and we were sitting outside and we were chatting, and she, of everybody on the team, had gotten really deep into sort of like understanding the history of this show, which I found really interesting because, you know, I was an American, and so I had studied a lot about like the American South and slavery and racism in the US, and I had context, but she really didn't. Like, this was all for her really new. And so she'd been doing all this research and looking into all these things. And so we're chatting about that and sort of like the experience she was having reading all this stuff and whatever. And then she goes, so I came across this really weird, this thing while I was doing my research that like sort of freaked me out about the history of slavery in Cape Town. Okay, so I'm going to go on a little bit of an aside now because I think this is really interesting and it's relevant. Okay, so Cape Town in Southern Africa has its own history of slavery, and not unlike in the States, you know, it was people thought it was a real good idea to import your slaves from another continent because then they can't run away back to their families. Mm-hmm. And oversimplify it. And so in South Africa, the colonial powers would import slaves from Southeast Asia. Mm. They would bring people in from Malaysia and Thailand and enslave them in South Africa. And so there is a whole portion of South African culture, which is about the sort of intersection of Southeast Asian folks who were brought there as slaves, and then the way that those cultures intermingled with the local African culture.
Huh.
Just fascinating and a whole other story. But okay, so you have this long history of a slave trade in South Africa that has a lot of parallels to the one in the States, but is also different and unique in really particular ways. And this woman who I was working with, she says, you know, I was doing this reading about that history and I didn't know this until just the other day, but this building where we're performing is where they used to hold those slaves when they got off the ship.
Whoa.
And this courtyard that we're sitting in is where they would do the slave auctions. And she said, I think that's why this space is resonating so powerfully with this story we're telling. And then I told her the story about how I couldn't get the lights to work. And she was like, yeah, I think these things are related. So she and I, both the two of us, went and had a conversation with the space. We went into the building and sort of like just sat there and talked about it for a little while. And after that, the lights worked fine.
Wow.
And we didn't have any more problems.
OMG.
It was really powerful.
Good God.
Yeah.
Just to discover that's the space you're in, and you've been in it and
yeah.
not at all aware, and yep. then suddenly, oh my God.
Yeah. That's absolutely the context of a scary movie.
Yeah.
But yours had a much better ending.
Well, and I think the kind of awareness of, you know, we are walking, and this is such an important thing, particularly for Americans, but we are always walking in spaces that where crimes mm-hmm. against humanity have been committed,
yeah.
Yeah.
And like there is such an importance of that awareness. Mm-hmm.
The Fable and Folly Network supports creators of exceptional audio stories, including the one you're listening to right now. If you love our shows, we want to hear from you. Complete our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey. This will help us learn more about you, what you like, what you'd like to hear more of, and how we can maintain an inclusive, safe atmosphere. As a thank you for your participation, we have extras and behind-the-scenes content from your favorite shows. Fans make the network what it is. Thanks for listening, and we can't wait to hear from you. Find our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey today.
It is early May in 1934, Saturday night, late, like 2 in the morning. And Guy and Josephine Malloy are on their way home. Guy and Josephine are the classic power couple. High school sweethearts, started work straight out of high school at Neiman Marcus, the fancy department store downtown, and worked their way up to being the top of the heap. Josephine is the lead executive assistant there, and Guy is the head window dresser. And so they've been there super late because Guy was getting all of the displays perfect for the start of summer sales that are going to be opening that Sunday. And so this is another one of the things that's nice about being married to the executive assistant, because you don't have to worry about keys or things like that. But it was still a very long day of work. They are tired, they are cranky, and they are speeding home to their place in White Rock Lake. It is so late at night, they're even taking the chance of doing that shortcut around the lake, because usually that's the haven for like teenage drag racers and stuff like that. But they figure it's probably late enough that they're not going to have to worry about that. It'll just be a quicker jaunt home. And as Guy is thinking about putting on a nice, comforting robe and not even having his hot toddy, he'll just crash, and then maybe they'll have a margarita or Bloody Mary in the morning. Josephine says, Guy, stop the car right now.
Uh-oh.
Now, I said that they were high school sweethearts. That means that they have been together since high school. Mm-hmm. They're not young anymore. They've worked their way up through Neiman Marcus. They are the older side, they're in their late 40s, so they know how to fight. Guy also knows when not to fight. There's been many a time when Josephine has said to him, I didn't spend all day saying yes, Mr. Neiman, just so I could come home and say yes, Mr. Malloy.
Yeah, that's right.
True.
Yeah.
True.
So Guy stops the car and says, wait. And Josephine, who is cranky at this point, we've established, says, did you not see that child back there?
Oh, no.
Sopping wet. Now, and again, they're in their late 40s, so for her, child means 16 or 17. This was obviously a teenager. And Guy says, oh, honey, don't make us stop. We're just so close to getting home. And she says, did you see? So you saw her. And he says, yes, dear. And she says, and you think we're going to go straight home instead of helping that poor girl? No, dear.
Oh, no.
The poor girl that I saw was clearly wearing a Neiman Marcus designed dress.
relevant.
And if anything, Guy knows Neiman Marcus, and he grumbles to himself, yeah, from a couple of seasons ago.
Oh, no.
And Josephine says, Guy Malloy, we are going back there because if there's one thing that we insist on at Neiman Marcus, it is taking care of our customers.
At and 3 so in the morning.
He drives back, and sure enough, there's this poor little waif, and she's got soaking wet hair, and she's got a soaking dress, and she just looks kind of lost and really grateful that they stopped. And she says, hello, ma'am. And Josephine says, oh, hello, dear. What are you doing out here so late? And she says, oh, ma'am, if you could help me, I'd really appreciate it. I was out with some friends and we were boating and the boat capsized and my friends are all safe and fine, but I still have to get home. And Josephine says, oh, of course, honey, we'll make sure you get home. And she says, thank you, ma'am. I live over in Oak Lawn. And Guy says, that's across town. And Josephine says, we will make sure you get home. She says, thank you very much, ma'am. I'll just crawl in the back. I don't want to get anything wet on your nice upholstery. And sure enough, they let her in, and she scoots in the back, and they don't say anything else for the rest of the drive, because obviously Guy is not in the mood for small talk. He was so close to his bedding gown. And Josephine, well, she tries, but after a while, it's pretty clear that the poor thing is kind of shaken up. Maybe she's in shock. They haven't invented shock yet. It's the 1930s.
That's probably what's happening. Yeah.
So they're just going to get her home, and they're at the main intersection leading into the Oak Lawn neighborhood, and Josephine turns around to say, now, can you just direct us from here? Guy, she's gone. And Guy says, what do you mean she's...
Oh, no.
What? And Josephine says, did she get out of the car? And Guy says, honey, it's a coupe. So, you know, clearly she would have noticed. So they still wind their way through that neighborhood until they find the address that the girl had given them in the first place. And Josephine needs closure here. So she goes and she knocks on the door at God knows what time at this point, until this elderly man, maybe their age, comes out and says, can I help you? And Josephine says, sir, I'm so sorry, but we were just helping a young girl, and she said that she lived here, and she was sopping wet, and we wanted to make sure that she got home okay. Did she come up on you? And he says, that's impossible.
My daughter died 2 years ago.
Yeah.
She drowned in White Rock Lake.
Yeah, she did.
Tonight would have been her prom night.
Yeah.
Very and they good. Found a tiara in the back seat.
I love it. That was a Neiman Marcus prom dress story. From 2 years ago.
That's true.
It's ridiculous. I was looking at that, like Dallas top 12 like best ghost stories, uh-huh. and this was one of the ones that hit. And I've just always loved so many different parts of that kind of story.
Yeah. Was she eating one of those like great Neiman Marcus cookies?
I'm sure she must have been.
Oh, man.
And that is the crazy thing to me as well, is like a lot of the different iterations of this story really went ham on the Neiman Marcus cross promotion, too. She was very clearly wearing a Neiman Marcus gown in several of them. Yeah, I don't know why that plays so
that's
prominently
such a specific
in it.
The 12 best Dallas ghost stories brought to you by Neiman Marcus.
But this was legit, actually originally published sometime in the 1930s. In Dallas. Oh, wow. Yeah. And so I don't know if that's the original version of this or just a original version of this.
Good story.
Yeah.
Thanks, Ellie.
Okay.
So one of the other things that you should know about Knox County, on which Lodge County, aka the seat of Mount Absalom, is partially based, is that the tallest building in Knox County is Caples Hall. Caples is 9 stories tall. I lived on the 3rd floor, I believe, my sophomore year. It was lovely. It's a little bit of that kind of 70s architectural brutalism. It's got one big elevator going up and down the center. So the story goes, sometime in the 80s, maybe, there was a student comes home from partying. He's just broken up with his girlfriend, who lives on the 7th floor. So he gets in the elevator. He goes up. Cable's elevator is very slow. The lights don't work great. They kind of flicker, even now. And it lurches to a halt at the 7th floor. He gets out. He goes and pounds on her door. It's 2 a.m. Oh. She's just broken up with him. She doesn't want to hear from him.
No.
She ignores him. You know, you hear the elevator buzz in the back. He pounds on the door again. She says, go away. And he throws up his hands, goes back to the elevator and presses the button. But the Caples elevator is very slow. And he's very drunk.
Oh, no.
And he gets impatient.
Like you do.
And so he pries open the door.
Uh-oh.
And steps into the elevator shaft.
Oh, no.
And falls. 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 to the floor of Caples. As I understand it, stories say that he passes away on the ambulance ride, but clearly the emotional impact is here in Caples. So now this story was told to me by Dan Turner, who I was very sad to hear passed a number of years ago. Dan was the head of security while I was a student at Kenyon and led an amazing ghost tour every year. At least every year that I was there. And I went every year. It was incredible. He knew all the stories and he knew just how to tell them. So I really just try to follow in his footsteps here. So he was there on campus during the summer. Now, summers in Gambier, I've been there once, and they are very strange. It is empty. There are, you know, again, we have a few students who are doing summer research. Sometimes there are, you know, a few writers or other people who are there working, you know, coming there for a quiet place to work, but it is empty. So Dan, as head of security, is going around the campus and gets a call. and says, "Hey, I think some kids have broken into Caples. There are lights on. And that building has been locked up. No one stays in Caples over the summer. There are much nicer historic dorms for that." So he goes and room 711, its light is on. And so he goes up and he turns it out. And he comes back down, goes outside, and the light's on again. And so he goes back and says, "Okay, well, I guess I didn't secure it." And so he locks the door again, goes up, turns the light off, comes down. And then he gets a call from the switchboard. And he said, "Hey, what's going on with the phones?" He says, "What do you mean?" This person on the switchboard says, "We just had one ring in room 711 and one ring in 611.
Ah!
And one in 511, 411, 311, wow. 211, no, first
no, no,
floor.
No, 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 no."
And he looks back up, and room 711's light is back on. And that light burned all night.
Mm-hmm.
And he just left.
Smart person.
Yep, that's the right answer at that point.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Sometimes the answer is nope.
Yeah. There were stories about water taps going on when no one was there. And maybe that's just faulty plumbing, but maybe not. All right, listeners, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back with more in 2 weeks, and I hope your Halloween is safe and just the right level of creepy.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.
Hello, hello. I'm Malik.
I'm Jamie.
And this is World Gone Wrong, where we discuss the unprecedented times we're living through.
Can your manager still schedule you for night shifts after that werewolf bit you?
My ex-boyfriend was replaced by an alien body snatcher, but I think I like him better now.
Who is this dude showing up in everyone's old pictures?
My friend says the sewer alligators are reading maps now.
When did the kudzu start making that humming sound?
We are just your normal millennial roommates processing our feelings about a chaotic world in front of some microphones.
World Gone Wrong, a new fiction podcast from Audacious Machine Creative, creators of Unwell, a Midwestern Gothic mystery. Learn more at audaciousmachinecreative.com.
Find World Gone Wrong in all the regular places you find podcasts.
I love you so much. I mean, you could like up the energy a little
you
bit.
You could up the energy.
I actually don't take notes.
That was good.
I'm just kidding. You sounded great.
So did you.